It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. Hello everyone and welcome to episode number 211 of Meat Trapper Radio. I don't have to tell you that it is summertime and boy is it hot outside, at least where I am. We've got heat indexes up over 100 every day, and then when we have our usual southern afternoon thunder shower, it seems to just increase the humidity as well. And but I was talking with a friend, and he said he heard the katydids hollering the other day, and he's predicting 90 days until the first frost. So I asked him if he could get them to sing a little bit louder and maybe bump that date forward a little bit. So yes, I like a nice cool weather day. Summer is fine, but you know, everything gets old after a while, it seems. But one thing that we have to take advantage of during this warm weather is we have to get our traps and our snares ready for the coming cold weather. And I don't think I have to tell people that this season may be a little bit different season than seasons past. There may be a little bit more on the line with your ability to catch meat or shoot meat this year. I have long predicted, and you can go back and listen to previous episodes, I've long predicted that there would be a second wave of this virus and that they would shut everything back down again. I had no idea that they would implement it this early, but I guess they're getting it in plenty of time for the election. I believe that this is a politically motivated stunt. And if you are a Patreon member, then you were able to listen to our most recent bonus episode about the so-called spike in numbers. And with the fact that they're now resorting to DNA testing to find traces of COVID DNA to pronounce a case positive. But So, in the spirit of getting your traps and snares ready, what I have been doing, and I'm just going to share what I have been up to for the last several days here, is a couple of things. Number one, you know, I have snares that carry over from season to season. In other words, if let's say I make a snare, it goes in the snare bucket. And as I go through my season, I may use that snare and not make a catch, and then it gets coiled back up, put back in the bucket. It may make a catch, in which case it is cut up and done away with, and I recycle the parts. So the bottom line is when you go into the next season and you have a snare that was already made, you don't know if it's a year old, 2 years old, 3 years old, or what have you. So what I'm doing is I'm going through all of my pre-existing snares and I'm separating them out, and anything that has gotten a little bit stiff or a little bit questionable, I'm going to recycle it. I'm going to cut the cable up. I'm going to do away with the cable. Then save the lock, save the swivels, save the support collar. You know, all of that, all of the parts. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to refresh my inventory so that my inventory is completely new and good to go. So that's sort of a radical step, but I simply don't want any older stuff causing me issues going forward, because I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to get parts and supplies, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. So I'm building my snares, I'm building my extension cables, I am Building my earth anchors. I am using the best quality components that I get from southernsnares.com. I'm using barrel swivels. If you were able to attend the most recent Kentucky convention, the COVID convention up in Wingo, Kentucky that Micah Seavers put on, Brian and I were there, and I did a demo on snare building and had the opportunity to shake a few of you guys' hands and trade some small talk and what have you. But if you watch that demo, you see exactly how I build my snares and what I use and why I use them. So I do have some older, cheaper cable that was still on a spool, some 3/32 inch Chinese cable that I did not get from Brian. And I'm using that for my extension cables and earth anchors and what have you. And what's interesting is I take that cable and I hold it up and it's just corkscrewed right off the spool. It's unbelievably bad cable. And that's one thing that I talked about on my demo, is your cable is the heart of your snare. And if your cable is cheap, you're just going to have problems from then on out. And what I'll be doing is once I have my snares and all of that built, I'm going to leave them out in the grass to weather for a few weeks. I have gotten to where I no longer boil my snares, because I believe that boils the oil out of the interior of the cable and allows corrosion to set in from the inside out. And it makes the cables stiffer and not as fast firing. So I'll let Mother Nature do some wearing of the oil, the exterior oil off, and then I will dip them. And I am experimenting with the bulletproof dip this year. It's a clear dip, so I'll dust them with some spray paint and bulletproof them and see how that goes. But unless you've been living under a rock, you know that it's damn near impossible to get guns, get ammunition, and even holsters. I've had some interesting experiences here. I'm going to be taking some training classes. I'm going to be renewing my skills and refreshing my skills, because you know, I spent a lot of time in Central and South America, but that's been 30 years, and I'm an old man now. And it never hurts to go through some training classes and get a refresher on your skill set and get back in the groove. And, of course, that takes ammunition, and it takes equipment. And I've had a couple of shipments that were delayed. I bought an Alien Gear holster for my Walther 9mm. And I think I purchased that holster 2 months ago. And it's still not here. I also have been working on my sling setup on my AR-15. I've been doing some modifications with that. In other words, you know, fine-tuning my gear. Because a lot of people want to talk about going out and buying guns and buying ammo and stockpiling this and that. But, you know, when you really get down to it, the details count, including your sling setup. And how well it works for you under a stressful situation and all of that. But I had ordered a new quick release mount from Midway, and it's been several weeks and it hasn't come in. So I started checking on these shipments that hadn't come in yet, and they had been shipped from the manufacturer. But there, and I wanted to tell you this because I was unaware of this, but there's a program called Postal Innovations. And Postal Innovations is a collaborative program between UPS and the post office, where UPS ships the package across the country, but then they get to a centralized depot and they hand it over to the U.S. Postal Service, and the Postal Service finishes the delivery to your doorstep. Well, evidently there's been some sort of change, policy change by the post office. And what they're doing now is, when these packages get delivered to the depot, the United States Post Office is letting them sit there until a sufficient volume of packages is accrued at this depot. And once there's a sufficient volume, then that shipment is pushed on out and it gets delivered to you. So both of my packages that I've been waiting on are sitting in a U.S. Postal Service depot here in Tennessee, just a couple of hours away, but they've been there for 2 weeks. It's just, And why am I going on and on about this? Is it because I'm upset about a package? No. What I'm trying to convey is, if you don't have something and you need it, you need to go ahead and get it. Because just because a trap supply dealer has trap supplies doesn't mean that it's actually going to make its way to you when you need it. In other words, there are difficulties all along the supply line right now. And I don't think it's going to get better. I really don't. I think this is by design. Let me give you another example. I just purchased several hundred rounds of 223 ammunition. That's law enforcement soft point ammunition, because I've been able to find the full metal jacket rounds from time to time, but the soft point hunting style, law enforcement style ammo has been very difficult to find, and it's over doubled in price. So I paid double the going rate, because it's the double the going rate is now the going rate. So I paid the going rate, and when the shipment arrived, I opened it up, and it was in the correct Winchester box. But when I opened the Winchester box up, something just wasn't right. The little styrofoam inserts that were in the box, the holes in it were way too big for the 223 rounds. And I thought, well, that's unusual. And I did a little research, and what I'm finding is that all through the supply chain, it's getting harder and harder to find what you need. In other words, people that have products that they manufacture are having trouble finding the right size boxes or the right size inserts. So in other words, Winchester had to ship with what they had. They didn't have the right size inserts, so they used a size larger. Now, this is just a minor little thing, but what you're seeing is cracks in the system. Everywhere you look, you're seeing cracks in the system. There's little fissures forming in the dam, and there's water that's starting to trickle out here and trickle out there. That's what this is. You add it all up, because if you just look at one little thing, oh, well, my packages are running slow. Well, okay. The box is the wrong size. It's not the right thing. Okay, that's very minor stuff. But if you were an intelligence analyst and you started putting all of this together, it's painting a very disconcerting picture. It's painting a picture of a supply system that is having a lot of potholes and bumps in the road. And that's not a good sign. When you have a street and you start having more and more potholes, it's a sign that things aren't being maintained. It's a sign that there's underlying issues. If they don't come and pave the road, it shows you there's money problems, there's organizational problems, and your road is going to continue to get worse. The more potholes that are in your road, the more potholes that are going to form, the more vehicles are going to be damaged, the slower you have to drive, and it snowballs. And that's what we're seeing here. And that brings me to the first topic I want to discuss tonight, and that's precious metals. Now, there are a lot of people that poo-poo precious metals. You need to invest in the stock market. You need to invest in real estate. You need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do the other. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But people don't see the value in precious metals. And one of the things, I have a lot of people coming to me asking for advice and asking, what is the deal with gold and silver? You know, is it a good time to invest in gold and silver? And the first thing I tell them is, you do not invest in gold or silver or platinum or palladium, or rhodium. These are not investments, because those are money. Gold and silver are money. Federal Reserve notes are currency. There is a big difference between money and currency. gold and silver or money. If you don't believe me, ask the founders. Go read the Constitution. It's very clearly and very plainly stated. And the devaluation of the money system is one of the few crimes that the founders explicitly put in the Constitution as the is eligible for the death penalty. If you deface and degrade the money, you face the death penalty, because they knew exactly what would happen. And here we are, if we had only listened. But we didn't. So back to my point, you don't invest in gold to make money, because gold is money. What gold and silver are a store of wealth. They're a store of value. It's not something that you get rich off of. And that's the first thing that people have to understand, because the people that ask you, do I need to invest in gold and silver, are still thinking in the fact that their dollars are money, and they want to make more money with a metal. And in fact, it's the reality is completely backwards. They're completely 180% wrong. Their dollars are not money. Their dollars are currency. Money is gold and silver. And when you see the quote-unquote price of gold and silver going up like it is now, gold and silver, the value is unchanged. What they're witnessing is the devaluation of their currency. Their dollars are worth less. Why do you think housing prices are going up? Is it because the house is more valuable? No, it's because it takes more pieces of paper to buy the house, just like it takes more pieces of paper to buy the 1 ounce of silver or the 1 ounce of gold or the 1 pound of hamburger meat. There's a general trend here. It takes more pieces of paper to buy things of value, and the things of value haven't changed. The hamburger meat is 1 pound of hamburger, still 1 pound of hamburger. The house is still the house. 1 ounce of gold is still 1 ounce of gold. The only thing that's changed is it takes more pieces of paper to do it. So back to the point, since it's a store of wealth, if you have $100 or $1,000 or $1 million or $1 billion, when you see your billion pieces of paper becoming worth less, what do you do to protect their value? Well, you put it into hard assets. Some people buy real estate. You know, it depends on what you're knowledgeable with and how much you have and all of that. But if a man has, you know, a couple of $100s, he's not going to go buy acres of land with a couple of $100s. You know, if you put it in the stock market, you might make money. Then again, you might lose money. If you put it in the bank, you're definitely going to lose money because the inflation rate is higher than the interest rate. So one thing that you can do, one thing, I'm not saying that anybody should do this, but if you go and you buy an ounce of silver or a couple of ounces of silver, what you've done is you have inflation-proofed that money. That money is now secure in its value. It's not going to lose value over time. And if you've been following the metals market, you can see that all of this money printing has had an effect on the price, quote unquote, price of gold and silver. It's gone through the roof. And in my opinion, it's only getting started. I can remember people laughing at me when I paid $17 for an ounce of silver. Try buying an ounce of silver for $17 now. Good luck. In fact, try and find physical silver. It's a chore. Now, the other thing that people ask me about precious metals is about the spread. You know, they get online, get on their computer, and they say, what's the spot price of silver? And it says $21 per ounce. And they go to the coin store, and if they're lucky, their coin store has some silver. And then what they find out is they're shocked when the guy wants $25 an ounce when they were told the price was $21 or something of that nature. That's the spread. And I could do an entire episode on this, but I don't want to bore people. But you have two different prices. You have the spot price, the paper price, the stock market price, and then you have the actual physical real street price. In other words, it's almost like a black market. You know, you can get on the internet and look at spot prices all day long, but you're not going to put your hands on physical for anywhere near what the quote-unquote spot price that's quoted on these exchanges and on the stock market is. And that's because it's all a scam. It's all a game. And when you actually try and put some in your hand physically, you're going to find out exactly what it's worth. And there are a lot of factors for that. Like I say, there's a lot of scams being run by Wall Street banks against precious metals to artificially depress the price to keep the illusion going that the Federal Reserve note is a good thing. But then there are simple factors of demand. You know, there's only so much silver coming out of the ground, and it has to go into a lot of things. And, you know, silver is not only a monetary metal, but it's an industrial metal. And what you're going to find is one of the biggest consumers of silver is solar panels. And as we go forward and the liberals get more and more of a stranglehold on this country and they put oil out of business because they hate oil and they hate conservatives who profit from oil and who have oil jobs and they want to go green, you're going to see more and more solar energy panels that consume silver. You're going to see more and more electric cars that consume silver. So there's a number of supply and demand issues with that. So anyway, I'm not going to go on and on and on about gold and silver. If there's enough interest, I'll do an entire episode. I'll do a bonus episode over on Patreon on it. But all I'm saying is that I have been a heavy buyer of silver, physical silver, and even at the current elevated prices, I am still buying and I'm going to continue to buy. I don't think we've seen anything yet. And if you look at just look at the Fed balance sheet. The Fed's balance sheet now is over $7 trillion. Here's an interesting little experiment. The Fed has printed over 7 trillion electronic Federal Reserve notes to prop up the stock market. Guess how many Federal Reserve notes are actually in physical existence on planet Earth? In other words, if you took all of the dollars, the physical paper dollars, and you added them up on planet Earth, it's about $1.6 trillion. But yet the Fed balance sheet is $7 trillion. And what is the federal government debt? $21 trillion? But there's only $1.6 trillion in existence. Where's the other $20 or $30 trillion that are on these books as far as government debt and Federal Reserve debt? It's fairy dust, people. They don't exist. They're electronic digits. Let that sink in. There's over $20 trillion in electronic existence that don't exist physically. And people are going to laugh at cryptocurrencies because they don't physically exist. Wake up! Neither do most of the dollars. And people laugh at cryptocurrency because it's not backed by anything? Well, neither is your Federal Reserve note. Oh, I forget. The Federal Reserve note is backed by something. It's backed by the full power and might of the United States Armed Forces. That's what backs up your Federal Reserve notes. What you're witnessing, people, is the planned destruction of the economy of the United States of America so that it can be reformed and remade with new owners and new masters. And it's one big club, and you ain't in it. All right, now the second half of this segment, I want to share some feedback from a Patreon member, and normally I only do this on the second half of the show, but I thought this was such useful information and so valuable an education, at least it was to me, that I wanted to share it with the widest possible audience. And what I'm talking about is I am looking to buy a boat, a skiff, you know, something like a Ginu or a Santee skiff or something like that. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm holding off on this purchase because, as I've pointed out, we're about to witness an avalanche of evictions and foreclosures because we're coming up on this next week and 2 weeks with the eviction moratorium being lifted, where the federal government has said you can't kick anybody out of their federally funded house or federally funded mortgage because of the COVID situation. Well, that moratorium is coming to an end, and people are going to have to cough up their rent money or get the hell out. And we've also had rent moratoriums where, you know, in different cities, the governors and the mayors have come out and said, well, you don't have to pay your rent, you know, because, you know, the COVID and everything. So you can just live rent free and go out and protest every night. Well, that's coming to an end. So when that happens, you have a couple of things that are going to happen. Number one, if you haven't paid rent in 4 months, you don't just pick back up and start paying rent. You have to cough up all 4 months. And nobody, Americans don't save any money. And the ones that have been getting the unemployment plus the extra $600 a week, they've been out buying big screen TVs and everything else. They haven't been saving their money. And that $600 a week is going to come to an end. So we're a couple of weeks from a lot of stuff coming to a complete end, and then there's going to be this 30, 60, 90-day lag, and then you're going to see the results right around election time. Imagine that. People are going to get thrown out of their apartments. They're going to lose their houses. They're going to go bankrupt right around election time. And guess which party is going to be there promising more free stuff? Go write it down on your calendar and come back at election time and tell me if I'm wrong. But anyway, I'm expecting to see a lot of four-wheelers and a lot of boats and a lot of stuff like that go on sale in a couple of weeks. And if you are smart enough to have saved some cash and you're in the market for such things, it might be a good time to buy. So Joe, who lives up near the Chesapeake, and he has a wealth of experience with all types of boats. He's just he's just a gold mine of information. And I had sent him a couple of emails and said, what do you think about this boat? What do you think about that boat? And he's like, you know, I wouldn't buy something brand new because you're paying brand new price and you don't need to sink $20,000 into a Ginu. And, you know, and then, you know, you start looking and it seems like these days you've got either the really crappy cheap stuff or the really expensive stuff. And it's hard to find that middle ground. It's hard to find something in between. You got the $1,000 Ginus that are just garbage, and then you got the $25,000 that are fresh off the line and all of that. And so I was asking him about you know, is this boat worth it? Is that boat worth it? And I want to share his methodology for valuing used boats. Now I had sent him some specs on a boat that I was looking at, and I want you to just listen to his reply. He said, let's start with the old two strokes, And this boat had an old 9.9 horsepower two-stroke motor on it. He says, I know Johnson Evinrude is the best. Stick to a 9.9 to 15 from 1974 to 1992, or the newer series 92 Plus, essentially unchanged during that run. Parts are everywhere. The biggest problem is broken bolts from stainless bolts seizing in aluminum housings. He said, and this was an older motor. He said, any motor of this vintage is going to need a minimum of a water pump kit, gear oil, good tune-up, et cetera, et cetera. From 1977 plus, they got away from points ignition, and thus it's more reliable. It took me a good while to finally get my carb adjusted on this. He said, these motors go from $500 to $800 in good shape. I buy parts motors in this vintage for $100. If a motor's had water pump done in the last couple of years and they can prove it, I would take it over another one, and I might even pay a little more. Those lower unit bolts are known to ring off. There are so few outboard options anymore, you are almost stuck using vintage motors in a two-stroke. He says, personally, I wouldn't want one of those old 9.5 horsepower motors. I've heard the carbs have tiny passages, and they are a problem to keep clean. They're also a little heavy for their output. He says, the motor that I had sent him pictures of, he said, it looks clean. They claim it's been serviced, yada, yada, yada. He said, that's probably something that I wouldn't keep on the boat. If I bought it, I would sell it off, and then I'd repower it with something else. And then he talks about using non-ethanol for all of these. He says, I pay nearly $3 a gallon for this stuff, but non-ethanol gas is cheaper than repairs, and you don't have any water problems. He says, anything Yamaha is going to hold good value and bring $700 to $1,000 in that size. He says, four strokes are quieter and maybe more reliable, but then again, they do have more parts and they are heavier. I'd steer clear of a four-ish Mercury. They are known not to run right in small sizes, but I've heard that they are under-jetted to meet emissions. I've always wanted to try re-jetting one. We had a 6-horsepower that you had to cut the air back on air back with the choke, which means it wasn't getting enough fuel. Yamaha, Suzuki, Honda, all are good choices. And then we're talking about a Ginu here. He says, as far as the 15 high sider, I like to break down the parts. As long as the trailer has a title, might be worth $200 to $300. I can't tell if it doesn't fit quite right and needs some adjustment. The axle looks a little bit too far forward. The hull probably isn't worth more than $800, probably more like $500. The motor, if it runs really good, maybe $300. So I'd start sniffing around $1,000 on this boat and check their interest. And I think the guy was asking $1,800 for the boat, trailer, motor. So in other words, what he is teaching me here is break everything down into parts. Number one, look at the motor, and you've got to know a thing or two about motors. Just because something says X and X horsepower, is it a two-stroke? Is it a four-stroke? What vintage year is it? Is there any problems those years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then look at the trailer. Is the trailer designed for the boat, or is it one of these things where Billy Bob had a trailer sitting out in the backyard, and then he went out and bought a boat that will kind of sort of fit on it, everything is a system and designed to work together, and it's going to work better when the trailer is actually the right size for the boat, and the motor is actually the right size for the boat. And so by looking at this as a system, and splitting it up, let's look at the motor, let's look at the hull, and then let's look at the trailer, and break it down like that, then you have a better idea of whether or not what they're asking for a used boat is actually worth it or not. So we're talking Ginus, and on last episode, I played his segment where he just gives an absolute great breakdown of the different types of Ginus, the Ginu Classic, high siders, low tides, and all of that. And so he says, personally, I'm looking to get into a classic. It's a little bit bigger than the boat I'm looking at, but less like a canoe. It can run up to a 25 horsepower, but we'll probably need a road trip to Florida to get one. Going to need $4,000 to find a nicer one. Okay, and so right there, that's another critical piece of information, in that that's that sweet point, that middle point that I'm always talking about in gear, where you're not buying the $20,000 skiff, but you're not buying the $1,500 skiff, and you're looking at a point around $4,000 where you're starting to get into something that's good and serviceable. So he said, if you like the Towie or the Santee, and these are other skiffs that he and I have been discussing, he says those are classic or LT25, low tide 25 sized, and the low tide is a Ginu classic or a Ginu low tide 25. He says, I don't think they can justify the price tags on them now. If I have to pay $15K for a micro skiff, it I could be in a hell of a nice flats boat or a bay boat for that. And then we talked about hubs and trailers and all of that. He says trailer hub and bearing maintenance is absolutely 100% necessary. I like a good synthetic grease for my hub bearings. And like you say, you'll end up like one of these dumbasses that can't run a grease gun. We were talking about getting stranded on the side of the road and all of that. I said keep the hubs grease, maybe the bearings and seals every couple of years. Make sure to replace the hub nut and pin. Even though I'm tight, I sometimes think a new trailer would be nice, even for a used boat, and that is one that's designed for your hull. And I fully concur with that, because I mean, how many times do you see these people on the side of the road? And they've got their truck, nice truck and everything. They got the boat behind them, and one of the wheels is off the boat trailer. You see it every freaking weekend. And that's because people don't take care of their trailers. They don't take care of the hubs. You know, they're down in the water, and as soon as they get home, they forget all about it, and nobody wants to pull any maintenance on the trailer. So if you think it's a crapshoot buying a used outboard, buying a used boat trailer, to me is you've got better odds in Vegas than that. So anyway, I thought that was a great email, and that was a great system for evaluating a used boat. And if you're interested in any of this stuff, you might want to have some dry powder coming up over the next 60 days or so, because I think a lot of people, unfortunately, are going to get caught in a crush, and they're going to need some cash, and their four-wheelers and their boats sitting out back, are they're going to have to pay the rent somehow. And just saying. So anyway, if you were a Patreon member, stay tuned for the second half of tonight's show. And if you are not, I would like to urge you to become one. You can go over to patreon.com/meattrapper and get signed up. It's $5 a month, but you get all kind of bonus material, all kind of bonus episodes, and you know, movies and documentaries and books and PDFs, all that kind of stuff. But more importantly, you become a member of a tribe of people that are truly good people that share their information, and we can have open, honest disagreements with each other in an intelligent, educational manner. And I truly, truly value that. And just as a note, we are still working the details out, but it looks like Barry and I will be hosting a night deer hunting snaring class up in Arkansas later this fall sometime. We're still working out the details. Barry is the lead man on that, and he's getting everything together. There's a lot of planning and preparation that has to go into this, and it's going to be for Patreon members only. This camp is. It's going to be a fully functional mock night hunt. We're going to be doing hands-on trapping and snaring instruction. Every man's going to build his own snares and set them. And all game laws and game license laws will be fully followed to the T for obvious reasons. But so there's a lot going on, and there's going to be a lot more going on. So anyway, if you're a member, stay tuned, and if not, thanks for listening.